3, 2, 1. Happy New Year from our friends over at Manscaped. The ball has officially dropped, but that doesn't mean you have to drop the ball on your balls in 2023. Whether you had a New Year's kiss or not, the leaders in below-the-waist grooming have you covered for your much-needed resolution of bringing sexy back. So join the 7 million men worldwide who trust Manscaped with our exclusive offer. Go to manscaped.com and use the promo code Sullivan20 for 20% off plus free shipping. Let us have a toast for a new year, new you, and a new you with no pubes. To complete the set, Manscaped threw in the Shed travel bag and anti-chafing boxers as free gifts to give to you to keep all your goodies stored nice and comfortably to go along with the Performance Package 4.0. Inside that Performance Package 4.0, you'll find the signature Lawnmower 4.0. The advanced skin-safe technology reduces cuts and nicks on your delicate parts. It also comes equipped with a 4000K LED spotlight that will shine a light to the promised land 2023 looks to be. Cheers to new balls in 2023. Get 20% off and free shipping with the code Sullivan20 at manscaped.com. That's 20% off with free shipping at manscaped.com. Use that promo code Sullivan20. Time to feel sexy and free this 2023 with Manscaped. And welcome to Taskmaster Talks with Kevin Sullivan. I'm your host, DGP John Paz. With me, of course, the star of the show, the former WCW and ECW World Tag Team Champion, one of the greatest minds and bookers ever in the history of the business, the Games Master, the Taskmaster, the devil himself, Mr. Kevin Sullivan. Kevin, how are you doing today, sir?
I'm doing wonderful, JP. How about yourself?
Doing good, doing good. I know WWE is, they're ramping up with Reigns and Sami Zayn and Cody Rhodes. I didn't know this until today, but you're a big Sami Zayn fan. I didn't realize that.
Oh, boy. This kid got something special. This MJF and Sami, the best talkers I've ever seen come along at the same time.
Wow, high praise.
Sami Zayn, to me, has the movement and the intensity and the energy of Robin Williams.
Wow, more high praise. Wow.
Yeah.
Kind of looks like him, too, with it when Robin Williams
is
here,
too. Yeah. He looks like him in Good Will Hunting with that goofy hat on.
Yes. Good Will Hunting? Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yep. With the Affleck and Damon. Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, that's some pretty high praise, though, you have for Sami. I'm not surprised, but you're loving him. Should he beat Roman Reigns? Should he be the champ?
Well, throws, we said last week, what do you do, right? That was with Roman and Cody. Now what do? It's a good problem to have. Two white meat baby faces, right? Against Roman. But, hey, it's a good problem for them to have. Good for them. I mean, two steaming hot baby faces. And then the Usos and Roman Reigns, they get a pretty solid thing going for a while, too. And then it, Kevin Owens and Drew and Seth, they get a, and I know I'm probably leaving out six or seven, Brock, Paul, keep going on down the line, Sheldon Benjamin, Bobby Lashley, they get a pretty stacked dressing room.
What do you think of, like, them finally having the contender to beat Roman, though? Because we went for a while where, you know, he had, you know, Cena would pop in or Edge would pop in and he'd beat them. And I remember, you know, he beat Daniel Bryan before Daniel Bryan went to AEW. But they didn't really have a guy that could actually, like, beat him for the title until maybe Sammy and maybe Cody, right? I mean, it seems like those two guys came around at once.
Right, and they have had a better chance. And Cody's story is very unique, too. His dad, if his dad had won the title, then the thing he had with Paul. But the Bloodline has had a long time to write their story. And they took you down different paths and then turned it around. You know what I mean? They've done this very, very good. This is one of the best storylines I've ever seen.
Wow, so many people are saying that. Such, you know, gigantic praise. And, you know, this is just as good as the NWO. People are saying, you know, they're saying different things about the storyline, but you're giving it that high of mark, saying this is a great story as far as all-timer.
It's one of the all-timers. It's no NWO. NWO changed the industry because you had the biggest heel, a biggest babyface turn heel with guys that came down that people actually thought they're from New York. But as a story, this is right up there with a bunch of great stories.
It is crazy how it kind of all came together. Because remember last year at WrestleMania, Sami Zayn was wrestling Johnny Knoxville. I mean, they're doing Jackass stuff. And now all of a sudden, they put him with the Bloodline. They built it up. I mean, it's just a complete 180 from last year's WrestleMania to this year.
And that's what I've kind of, that's what set me watching him. He had enthusiasm for that match where most people would say, oh, this is the shits. And, I mean, he worked that to make it work. I was very, I've been very entertained by him.
How come some guys can take that, you know, like, for instance, that, and it, like, it could propel them and they could do great. But some guys, they that happens to them, and, like, that's the end. It's like, oh, I wrestled the Jackass guy and they lost, and they buried me, and I was never quite the same. How come some guys get it and some guys don't?
Pride.
So you think Sammy basically was like, oh, whatever I'm doing, I'm going to be the best at it. If I'm joking, I'll do the joke stuff. If I'm going to be going in for the main event guy, the best guy in 2 decades, I'm going to be serious. It's like he just wants to be the best no matter where he is in the card.
I think it's pride's one of the 7 deadly sins, right?
Yep.
And he makes the best that I can see so far of any situation has been handled.
Surprised you like that Jackass stuff. Surprised you think, you know.
Hey, it's WrestleMania. How many hours is the show?
I guess, was it 8 combined? 4 yeah. One night, 4 the next?
Is it only 4 the first night?
Usually, yeah. The last couple of years, yeah. But because remember, I think it was 4 or 5 years ago, it was like 8 hours long. So they were like, okay, we got to change this.
Yeah, I didn't know it dropped down to, I thought it was 6, but still. 4 hours is a lot. You need some comic relief in it. You know what I mean?
Yep.
You can't be giving them the same match. And, hey, it's a crossover. They got some buys because it was Johnny Knoxville. The people love the match because Sammy made it work. I got a high praise. And Cody's thing is great, too, about, you know, blurring the lines about his dad. You know, Paulie gave him the job when they needed it. It was, they got great storylines going. They got Brock coming back. They get, and you know, and then on the flip side, you go to the AEW and you got MJF. I put him right up there with Sammy as a talker, a different type. You got Jericho. You got Danielson, Cesaro. The Lucha Brothers, I mean, you got a lot of good talent there, too. So I think it's a good time to be a wrestling fan.
Oh, no doubt. I feel like they haven't been this good in a long time. I don't know. Maybe a decade or so. I feel like maybe even more than that, they haven't been this good or this hot.
You know what the Roman things reminds me of? It's almost like a blueprint. I watched a couple episodes of Young Rock because of Downtown Bruno. Him and I have become friends. And, you know, he's got a... And I saw a couple of episodes. The one I did see, the whole one, was when they were booing the Rock out of the building.
Yep.
Rocky sucks. Didn't they just used to say that about Roman a few years ago?
Yep.
So almost history repeats itself. And he'll go off to Hollywood, and Rock will probably produce him. You know what I mean?
I could see that. Yep.
It
is funny, like, when you think about it, same family, too. And not even repeating itself. They're from literally from the same bloodline.
They're not really from the same bloodline, but they're blood brothers.
Cousins, right? Cousins through the mom.
I'm not so sure about that one either.
Really? I thought Afa was...
Peter's cousin?
I thought... Yeah, isn't there... Afa is... Rock's mom's cousin, isn't it? Isn't it her first cousin? If I remember how the tree looks.
Maybe, probably that's probably right. Yeah, but I know
because something with the tree. Because Peter Maivia to the daughter, obviously, and I'm pretty sure Peter Maivia is either his brother or Peter Maivia's sister. Afa was the son, I thought,
okay.
Or maybe I'm wrong, but I could have sworn there's like the tree is out there of the family.
Afa are both brothers.
Yeah, Afa.
It gets to be complicated. There's so many of them, you know.
Oh, yes, because then Rikishi, his mom, is Afa's sister. So then there's another, like, separation of the Fatus, if you will, yeah.
Once removed, yeah.
Yeah, yep. But obviously Afa and Sika's son is Roman, and obviously Rock's grandfather is the high chief.
Yeah.
Yeah, so, yeah, right? Yeah, they would be either first cousins or second cousins. However, but they're related.
Yeah.
regardless, they are related to each other. But it's just so fascinating that the Samoans have so many guys and they're all so good. But you could literally go on for days and be like, oh, what about Umaga? What about Yokozuna? You know what I mean? There's so many of these guys. They just keep pumping them out.
It's like in the NFL. There's the largest disproportionate number of people are – from Samoa and Tonga.
Yeah. There's a couple good ones. There's a couple good ones on the Eagles. There's a couple good ones on the 49ers. Yeah. It's the Samoans. They're killing it. Yep.
Yeah.
What a crazy, crazy thing, though, because it's such a small island. But, man, they just produced athletes.
Yeah. Yeah.
When you're looking at current WWE, though, you're saying it's a good problem to have. Just don't screw up the finish, basically, like with Sammy, Roman, and then Roman, Cody?
I mean, I know they're going to come up with something brilliant. I mean, they got something very special going. You know, you could end up, I could see this ending up later on 6 months from now in a three-way dance. I mean, you got 6 months already written in your back pocket. You know, I mean, this could be multiple turns too between three guys.
See, my thing is, I feel like the big story is with Sammy and the Usos. So, if as long as the Usos can get involved, well, I don't know if they can because it's in Canada. And I know, obviously, with Jimmy's DUI past, he's not allowed in Canada. Maybe Jay can get there, but I don't think Jimmy can. That there's one of the issues would be. Like Sammy and Jay have the past, and you know they're sneaking up and they're meeting up with each other, and
right. Like
I feel like that's where it is, maybe with them turning on Sammy and the Usos versus Sami Zayn and Kevin Owens in a tag match.
They have that going for them too. I mean, I like the thing with Kevin too. So they have a lot of good stuff, and I like the story with the Uso who didn't like Sammy now are best friends.
Yes,
yep. I like that story. That was done brilliantly. And then when he stood up against the tribal chief and the conversation they had in the middle, they were all in the ring.
Yep.
And then, you know, it was, it's very entertaining.
So Just looking it up real quick. So High Chief Peter Maivia's brother is Afa Sr.'s dad.
Okay.
Okay, so yeah, that's how it is. So Afa Sr.'s uncle is the High Chief, and obviously Afa's or High Chief's daughter is
Atta.
That's his first cousin, yeah. It's interesting. Yeah, such a wow, what an interesting breakdown when you look at it. And yeah. they all have like wrestlers underneath them, and then yeah. Rikishi's got Solo, the Usos, supposedly a fourth kid that's gonna wrestle. It's just crazy the way like the tree breaks out all the wrestlers.
Yeah.
Oh man, it's crazy. But let's talk about a different topic. Let's talk about the topic at hand. WCW Super Brawl 3, February 21st, 1993, Asheville, North Carolina, at the Asheville Civic Center. The attendance was over 6,500. The tagline, witness history in the making at the biggest event of the year. Pay-per-view buys only 95K, though. So only just about under 1,000 for the pay-per-view buy rates here. So where are you at this point? Are you in Smoky Mountain? Are you in Japan? Where are you?
I'm in Japan, but I'm working Smoky Mountain. I probably was working ECW too.
Yes. So it looks like you're like in your 93 is basically Wing in Japan. You're working a lot in there. You're working a lot for Smoky Mountain. You're working for ECW. You're working a little bit for the NWA in kind of correlation with the ECW. And then you're even working the Weekend of Champions, which I believe was a big John Arezzi show. You're working that as well against the one and only Terry Funk. I don't know if you'll remember that, but what a busy 1993 you had.
Yeah.
You like that though, working Smoky Mountain ECW, like it's a true independent contractor? You're loving that life?
Well, it was nice. I was lucky to have that to fall back on. Japan, you know what I mean? And it's a, you know, back in those years, you're running like, you know, 350, 360 days a year. Well, I could go to Japan for 3 weeks and take a couple of weeks off. You know, so it was good. And then if I was off a month, I'd go up, work for either Jimmy or Paul.
When you're in Japan, do you follow like WCW, WWF? Do you follow what's going on over here? You don't care.
Back then, you know, there was no really internet was young. Nobody was getting much news unless you were around Tokyo and you got to with some gong, you know, the gong wrestling magazine.
Yep.
Unless you knew somebody. Jimmy Suzuki or somebody like that will tell you what's going on. Once you get outside of Tokyo, it's kind of hard.
Were you allowed to work ECW Smoky Mountain at the same time? Not allowed, but like was Cornette and Heyman, they're okay with that? They don't mind?
No.
Because that's quite like an interesting 1993 for you. Like just if you just look at some of the guys, it's like, okay, I'm wrestling Tracy Smothers here, and then I'm wrestling Terry Funk here, and then I'm going to ECW and I'm going to wrestle the Iron Man Tommy Kyra or something. So it's just like such an eclectic group of guys that you're wrestling in different territories. Like you're wrestling Bullet Bob, then you'll wrestle like Tommy Dream or something. It's just an interesting kind of 93 for you.
Yeah, it was very nice too. I enjoyed it.
You and Taz, obviously, tag team champs in 93. The Tasmaniac, if you will.
Yeah.
That gimmick's pretty lame, no? What do you think?
Which one? The
Tasmaniac. Yeah,
I'm glad he became Taz. But I knew Paul would get rid of the Tasmaniac.
So in 1993 in WCW, I know you said you weren't really following along too much with it, but a lot of shakeup going on. So what happens is the Bill Watts era is about to end. I know you know about the story, but a bit of a controversy. There was an old interview came to light. Watts defended a restaurant owner who was basically for racial integration
against.
He was against racial integration. He was for the restaurant owner that was against the blacks. Like very weird kind of stuff would come out at that point about Watts. Do you think he was racist or do you think he was just defending the restaurant owner? Like what was the real story
behind
that? You
know who the restaurant owner was?
No, I don't remember offhand, no.
Lester Maddox, who was the lieutenant governor or governor at that time when he was doing that, owned a restaurant in downtown Atlanta and chased some blacks out of his restaurant with a axe handle.
Right, so he's not accepting the integration of races here. But Watts, why did Watts defend him? I never quite understood that. And I don't even know if I heard Watts mention why he was defending Lester.
I think Watts thought he was above everybody.
That people are going to listen to him and have to care what he says when he's saying
You know, there's some guys that don't care what they say. They think they can get away with it. So now we have this backlash with it. Everybody gets insulted, you know what I mean, about everything.
Yeah, yep.
Like Terry Bradshaw gets insulted because he said to Andy Reid, waddle over here, right? You saw that, right?
Yes, yeah. And hey, eat a cheeseburger for me. Obviously, they've known each other forever, and that's like a little bit of a joke between them. Yeah.
Yeah, you know. So, I think in this, to me, in this country, we either go too far to the left or too far to the right. We can't ever stay in the middle. I think we're so tribalistic as a species, too, that we can't just say, it doesn't bother me. You know what I mean?
Yep. So what did you think of Watts? Like, did you get along with him? Did you know him well?
This is crazy. I got along with Bill. I got along with Bill. I saw him yell at guys. I saw him do some really shit things. He was a bully, but he happened to like me. But I was there when Eddie brought him in to teach him how to book, so I was involved in that circle. So he didn't want me going back and ratting on him on some shit he would do. You know what I mean?
Yeah. So he's defending this guy, the Lester, and Lester doesn't want to accept racial integration. So then Mark Madden actually gets involved, who was working. I guess he might have been behind the scenes or might have been some sort of influence there for WCW at the time. And he brings it to the attention of Hank Aaron, obviously baseball legend, one of the greatest of all time.
Yeah.
And he basically demands Watts be fired. And then that's the end of Watts, right? I mean, pretty much.
That's pretty the story that I always heard.
And it's crazy, though, that like it takes Hank Aaron coming in saying something for like anybody even to pay attention. No one's probably paying attention to what Watts is doing and saying.
They were so far removed during that time. They weren't even the only thing they were hoping that Bill wouldn't take his gun into the office anymore. You know?
Yep.
Think about that.
Insane. Yeah.
Yeah.
So Watts is gone. So then a very unlikely man will replace him, and that's Eric Bischoff who comes in. At first, he's just the executive producer. He's not the executive vice president of yet, so he's basically in charge of like the TV side of things. Jim Ross went for the job. Tony Schiavone went for the job. They both did not get it, I believe. And I know Jim Ross has probably said this as well, that he didn't get the job, even though maybe he was the most qualified, because they tied him and Watts together. So it's basically like, oh, we got another Bill Watts on our hands.
Yeah, I see that easily, too. I'm sure that when Jim was going to lunch a lot of times in the CNN Center, he'd be accompanied by Bill. You know what I mean?
Yep.
So they got to see them like they were inseparable.
Definitely. So he ends up quitting. He ends up leaving. And basically, you know, Schiavone and Jesse Ventura will do the announcing. He'll be there. Bischoff will still be the announcer, even though he's technically in charge, like the backstage announcer. But no more Jim Ross. Is that a huge blow, a huge loss for WCW at this point?
Yeah, of course. Of course. And he did a remarkable job for Vince.
Yeah, he'll end up going to WWF, and because Gorilla Monsoon got sick, he basically did WrestleMania this year, 1993. He'll be him and Macho and Heenan will end up doing WrestleMania, and he does obviously a hell of a job over there, but it's just one of those things where it's like, I don't know, you could have had Jim Ross, you could have kept him, but again, they didn't want another wrestling guy, and they didn't want a Bill Watts disciple. So Eric Bischoff is going to be in charge. He's basically going to put the TV tapings to Disney MGM Studios. Great idea, right? Doing that?
Yeah. you know, you could go down there for 10 days and do 4 months of work. Or 3 months of work anyway.
Yep. He would lessen the number of house shows. He'd restructure some TV deals, funneling more money to WCW's budget. He's trying to run a tight ship. So basically, you know, he's trying to change things and change things for the better and just make more palatable as far as not getting out of the red, if you will. Try to get into the black and get WCW out of the red, which would under Watts, I mean, they were losing money. There's no doubt about it. I mean, the numbers are there.
Right, right.
Did you know Eric at all? I know maybe just from him backstage, right, at that point?
If I was there when Eric came in, it might have been a short period. When did Eric come in there?
91, 90, somewhere around there.
I probably knew him in 91.
He was a C-string announcer, if you will. He was behind Jim Ross, basically behind everybody.
Yeah.
So Super Brawl is here. It's a big show, but Bischoff's in and Watts is out. When that happens and a big change like that happens, does the booking need to change or do you keep it the way it is and just keep rolling and then eventually slowly but surely change it into what you want booking philosophy wise?
Yeah, you're going to have to change it, but you got to start changing right then, you know, because you're going to have to go with the matches that are booked. But it's now your job to decide who's going over and what you're going to do with the winner or loser.
Now, Dusty is still there, though. He's still like a booker, and Bischoff is technically in charge, but he's more the TV production side. Dusty's still the wrestling side. Would you say, hey, Dusty, let's change this, change that? Or do you just, hey, let's see what you got for the show. Looks good. Let's try to implement ideas going forward, new ideas.
That was Dusty's baby. I may throw him some ideas or he'd ask me something, but, you know, Dusty was a very strong personality. He was a genius. You know, everywhere Dusty went, he was successful. You know, we just talked about Sami Zayn making the Jackass match work.
Yep.
Dusty made the polka dots work.
True. So when you look at this, Dusty, at this point in time in 93, I don't know if you remember it, there was like these little mini movies that he was making that they were supposedly pretty expensive. Like they'd go to the beach and they'd film at the beach and they'd blow up a boat. This one, before this show, they did the White Castle of Fear where they had that little midget guy, Cheatham, whatever, he was roaming around. It was like the White Castle of Fear was Vader's home. It was a scary. Did you like those mini movies that he would
play? I wasn't in there then. I had left before they started making the mini movies. So, you know, Dusty has always wanted to be a director. You know, he thought him and Jimmy Crockett one time were going to go out and make movies in Hollywood.
Wow.
So Dusty, you know, I could see Dusty being a director, you know what I mean? I could see Dusty was a huge presence. Dusty had something when he walked in the room, you know he's somebody, even if you didn't know where wrestling was.
Yep. So it was funny for this one, the White Castle Fear, it's basically a quote-unquote cave in the Rocky Mountains, and you know Sting has to show up there. If anybody needs to see, I think it's probably posted on YouTube somewhere. They're just like, I don't know, funny, cheesy videos, perfectly for like the mid-90s, I guess you could say, early 90s. Just right. Cheesy mini videos, but I just wonder if the return was worth it, going out there, filming it, getting these actors and putting it together. It you get the return on investment for, were people really that into it? I don't know. Hard to say.
And I wonder what kind of boat they blow up.
Yeah, for the I think Beach Brawl 93 or something. I know it was Sting and David Boy Smith against Sid and Vader, and they blew up like the boat or whatever to build it up. I don't know how much it cost, but somebody online was saying probably $75,000 to blow the thing up. I said, wow, I hope not.
Well, was it? Did it have a cabin in the bottom?
No, it looked like it was just like a speedboat kind of thing.
Okay.
But even man, better. Dusty, you could tell Dusty loves being like the, you know, Hollywood style. That's what he liked with many movies.
Even back then, just the open Key West fisherman back in 1991 was right at $25,000. So that was only a 19-foot boat.
Wow. Okay. Yeah. So, yeah, it's probably pretty expensive then.
Yeah. But, and you're also paying for the engine. You know what I mean? That's a
big
factor.
Yep. So, here in early 93, Flair's on his way back. Can't wrestle yet due to a non-compete, but they put him on TV. He's hosting Flair for the Gold. His friend Wendy, aka Fifi the Maid, is there at that point. This is when, I guess, when they first meet, which is funny that they're still together 30 plus years later today. But it's just interesting that they're dying to have Flair back, but he can't wrestle yet. So it's like, all right, we got to get him on TV. He's got to do something. Let's do Flair for the Gold, like something to get him back on TV.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, you want to get Rick involved as quick as you can. I mean, basically he was, you know, WCW until they grew Sting and the Steiners, your homegrown boys. But he was unanimous. They were still an NWA member, I believe. So Rick was the NWA champion still at this time?
No, he's literally fresh off WWF.
No. But when he left, he was, that's right, he took the belt with him, right?
He
was NWA champion, right? He was NWA champion, right?
Yep, yep.
So, yeah, you know, he had been the focal point for the NWA for almost 10 years at this time, right?
Yep. And at this point, Gray Muda, who will be on the show, he's the NWA champion heading into this show.
Okay.
And the WCW champion, Vader, was the champion because he beat Ron Simmons on the house show. Ron Simmons was the champ. But they're saying that when Simmons beat Vader to when Vader then beat Simmons, that the title run in between with Ron Simmons wasn't that great. I don't know if he had the greatest opponents in the world. Feuding with Cactus Jack, who wasn't as over yet. He was feuding with Barbarian, Dr. Dusty Williams. I mean, maybe they could have gave him just maybe higher opponents in the card. Like, I know Rick Rude got hurt, so that was kind of a thorn in the side that he could have been feuding with Rick Rude. He could have been feuding with maybe Vader a little bit. Flair wasn't there to feud with, so maybe he didn't have a great opponent, but basically Vader's going to be the champ again.
Okay.
What do you think about that, though? Like, if Ron Simmons' title run, you think it was too short? Because it's only a few months. It's not like a huge, long title run for Ron Simmons.
I thought Ron was way overdue to get that belt. I had an idea when Ole was the booker, and Ole asked me, my idea was shit and it wouldn't draw. It wouldn't get any publicity. You know what my idea was?
Ron Simmons being the champion?
Yeah, with Coretta King and Martin Luther III there and put the belt on him. You think that would have made news?
Wow, yeah. Nice. Yeah, I would like that.
Ole didn't think it was meant shit, so. Wow. You say potatoes, I say potatoes.
So Simmons ends up only holding the title basically for 150 days before Vader wins it back at a house show, of all things. So I don't know, maybe they just weren't happy with the run and the way things are going. I know leading into this pay-per-view, he's actually injured too, so that might have played a role a little bit into it as well, that Simmons got hurt.
Ron's a stud. He could have been hurt at the match he won the belt and carried on through. You know what I mean?
Yep.
Who knows? I mean, yep. Ron is, he's superhuman. I used to tell him, Ron, walk by that bench over there, they got 500 pounds, and you'll grow 6 inches in your bicep. I mean, that guy, whoa.
Yeah, I had a talk with him a while ago when I brought him in for a signing, and he was saying, like, he didn't really lift that much, but when he did, he could lift, like, a lot. Like, he lifted heavy. I was like, how did you do that? Like, he's just a freak athlete where it's like he sees it and he just lifts it. Other guys, I mean, they have to work for years and months, you know, to develop a strength like that. He's just a freak of nature, yeah.
Yeah, he was a freak of nature. I mean, you know, I'm not sure I'm not right. I think he still the highest defensive player in voting in the Heisman Trophy. I knew he was a few years ago. You know, he's like fourth in the Heisman Trophy.
Definitely possible, yeah. Yep. Yeah, when he's nose tackle for Florida State, yeah. I know Charles Woodson won it in 97, but technically they counted him as a returner and a cornerback. So, kind of, I know Simmons is literally just flat-out defense.
Right,
so,
right.
Yeah. The interesting thing, though, leading up to this feud, and I feel like so many organizations, I'm sure WWE, this was copied off somebody else, but they always do the angle, because this is going to be the strap match, where the guy strangles the guy up like a noose or whatever and hangs him over the top rope. So leading into this pay-per-view, it's Vader does this thing. He got him hanging on the rope by the top rope, and he's holding him back literally by his neck with the strap, and that's a part of the build to the show. So, I mean, just the visual of it leading into it, it's like, oh man, Sting is in trouble here. Like, Vader's going to kill him. Like, literally, like, wow, this is going to be, this match is going to be intense.
Yeah. Yeah.
So I that's the main event, though. Vader Sting strap match. This, and it's going to be a doozy, too. It's going to be good.
Cool.
So let's start the show. We start a little with Bischoff and Missy Hyatt are talking. We see Max Payne playing his guitar. I know you're probably a big fan of that. Were you a big fan of Max Payne? I know you did take the book, I guess, a little bit when he was there, and him and Cactus Jack were a team, and then you and Cactus Jack kind of became the team. But did you like Max Payne?
Oh, as a person, he's a wonderful one. And, you know, he's a great amateur wrestler. Are you aware of that?
Yeah. I actually interviewed him not that long ago, and we were talking about that and talking about his time in Japan. Like, he was actually, like, tough as nails, like, to be able to handle some of that stuff.
Yeah, he's a super guy. I didn't have anything about Hiram, and I don't think I was in power when he left. Did he get it? This may add up. Did he go from WCW to Japan?
Yep. And then, well, he technically trained in the New Japan Dojo, then went to WCW, and I think went back to Japan, and then went to WWF as Man Mountain Rock.
Yeah, that's what I thought. So he got a good offer to go to Japan. Probably the amount of money he was working all full time. Those guys had sweet deals back then.
And I know there was an injury involved too, and I think the Nasty Boys, he might have injured one of the Nasty Boys. So there was a little bit more to it, yeah.
You've never seen that bump?
Oh, he basically is the scorpion or whatever, jellyfish.
He's jellyfish. If he had any muscles, he would have broken his neck. Knobs.
No muscles, yeah. He's lucky.
His feet just about touched his head on the mat.
Yep, crazy. Yeah, it's like a scorpion, basically, a scorpion tail kind of look. Yeah. So Max Payne, also, they're going to announce that he's getting a U.S. title match later on in the evening against Dustin Rhodes because Ron Simmons is injured, so he's going to fill that spot for later on in the card. But the first match of the night, we're going to start off with the Hollywood Blondes, Brian Pillman and Steve Austin, defeating Eric Watts and Marcus Alexander Bagwell. The match goes 16 minutes and 30 seconds, but it is very good. Kind of maybe surprisingly so because Bagwell and Watts are so green, but obviously Pillman and Austin are so good, right?
Right, right. Was Dusty booking this show right then?
Yes. He's the booker. Yep.
Okay.
Interesting, though. Watts gets fired, but his son stays.
Yeah, I mean, most guys in the wrestling business don't hold the sins of their father against them. You know what I mean?
Yep.
Most guys can separate the father being tough on them and not take it out on the kids.
Yep. So it's interesting to note here that Hollywood Blondes do win. Good match, good opener, maybe a little long, 16 minutes, but it was in 30 seconds, but it was good. But interesting to note that Steamboat and Shane Douglas, who are the WWE Tag Team Champions at this point, are not on the card. But for some reason, Jesse Ventura says Ricky Steamboat and his partner. He doesn't say Shane for some reason. So that's a little interesting little note there, a little nugget that he says that Pillman and Austin should be the champs, their number one contenders, the Steamboat and whoever his partner is. So a little bit of a dig there against Shane from Jesse. I wonder why.
I have no idea.
Maybe political differences, maybe.
Maybe.
You know what I mean? Without getting into it yet. But Pillman and Austin, they do say, are like the number one contenders. They're going to be going after the tag titles next. I guess a nice little win and really show them that they can kind of carry two green guys to a good match that's going to go 16 minutes plus.
Yeah, you know what I've said before, besides losing a tremendous, tremendous performer, we lost a very smart guy. He would have made an incredible manipulator, booker, owner, or whatever you want. He was a very smart guy, Brian. But I always say, if we start talking about wrestling feuds, if Brian had lived, they'd be the only one we talk about. Would be Austin or Pillman.
Would have been an awesome feud, especially when they both were in WWF together and they were doing that injury angle. Oh, it would have been awesome. Yep.
Yeah.
Missy Hyatt, your girl, she's in the back and she's saying a limo has arrived and Ric Flair will be at this show. So Ric Flair is going to make an appearance later on. Not wrestling, of course, like we talked about, but he will be there. The Natch returns after he just lost to Mr. Perfect in a Loser Leaves Town match on Raw.
You know, I don't know why they both did it, because when you announce that and you got a spot on the card, people know he's going to end up on the TV in 3 weeks.
Yeah.
You think so?
Yeah. Yeah. I guess it just kind of gets like Mr. Perfect a little rub, like, oh, I beat this guy. I ran him out of town. Yeah.
Yeah, but he didn't need that. Beating Rick would have been good enough.
Right, yeah.
You should have low-keyed it, you know. Oh, that's the perfect one. But Rick has to leave town. Oh, they're doing that angle again. You know, sometimes you just, and this is the era, supposedly kayfabe. Sometimes we just say, oh, if you don't want to come in the front, I'll leave the back door open for you.
Right. Yep. So the next match up, Too Cold Scorpio defeats Chris Benoit in 20 minutes. They gave this one some time. This was really, really good. I really liked this match a lot. Kind of, I know a lot of people would be surprised, but Benoit wasn't WCW before 95. He was in a bunch in 92 and a bunch in 93 here. Ventura really puts him over on commentary, how good of a wrestler he is and everything else, but Scorpio ends up getting the win in about 20 minutes. Really good second match here from Scorp and Benoit, as you probably would expect.
Yes, yes. They both were working for the same company in Japan, too, I believe, right?
New Japan Pro Wrestling, oh yeah.
So they had faced each other a bunch, I'm sure.
They seemed like they had great chemistry, definitely, for sure. Yeah. The next matchup, Davey Boy Smith defeats Cowboy Bill Irwin in 6 minutes. This was okay. It just almost felt like more of a showcase for Davey Boy than anything else. And Cowboy Bill Irwin wasn't, he wasn't getting the huge push where he's like this huge star of beating. So it almost just seemed like a little bit of a showcase match, kind of almost like a semi-squash for Davey Boy over Bill Irwin here.
Yeah, I think that's what it was, you know. Davey Boy just come in, or he's just been in there for a while. It gets him over.
Yep.
It doesn't hurt Bill. You're pushing who you think is going to draw you the money.
And Davey Boy's interview with Schiavone afterwards, basically saying, you know, he wants the world champion, kind of hinting that he wants to have a feud with Vader, and, you know, kind of teasing that him and Sting are buddies, but he wants Vader.
Yeah, I think they had some matches. I don't know if they had WCW, but they had some matches in WWF at the time, right?
After this, yeah. They did have a bunch of matches in WCW, too, after this pay-per-view in 1993 in the same calendar year. Very good. Bulldog, man, he does some moves that you'd be shocked that he can get Vader on his back and stuff. It's like, wow, holy crap. Like, pretty impressive stuff a lot of the times between those two.
Yeah. He was a very strong guy.
Next up is a match I was, like, I rewatching was floored with how good it was. But then when you think about the two guys involved, it makes sense. Falls Count Anywhere in the building. Cactus Jack defeats Mr. Wonderful Paul Orndorff, 12 minutes, 17 seconds. The thing that just surprised me was that just such a different style between the consummate wrestler, the pro's pro and Orndorff, and this wild, crazy nut brawler. But man, this might have been like Orndorff's best match in a couple of years. This was awesome between Jack and Orndorff, and they just go nuts on each other. Great match, 12 minutes, like I said.
I don't think as much as people put Cactus over, they don't realize how great a performer he was. Not just the crazy bumps. He could work with anybody.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, I saw some tapes of him and Terry that were unreal. Him and Sabu, unreal.
It's funny. It's almost like he's almost underappreciated as a wrestler because all the crazy bumps. But if you looked at it, Van Hammer, earlier on in this run for Cactus and Hammer and WCW, they had an awesome match. And Van Hammer, not known for having too many awesome matches, he's got a good one against Orndorff. He had a couple awesome ones against Sting. He's got a no-quit match against Sting from, like, WCW Pro. They tore the house down. It's awesome. I like the Beach Brawl match. He has awesome matches against Vader. It's like he could wrestle anybody, just Cactus.
Yeah, he could.
Next up is a real interesting thing, and let me know what you think about this. It's the Rock and Roll Express against the Heavenly Bodies. They're both technically still going to be Smoky Mountain property at this point. Technically speaking, the Heavenly Bodies and Cornette invaded WCW. So they would rip on WCW. Cornette would say a promo. Bill Watts would come in and get in his face, like, you don't even work here. What are you doing? Obviously, Watts and Cornette were close, and they set the angle up. But it was almost like the original invasion angle right here with Smoky Mountain. And obviously Jim Cornette has said it, they were setting the stage for more with Watts, but Watts is gone. That relationship's over.
Yeah. I remember Jimmy talking to me about that too, when I started working for him. And, you know, at that time, you know, it was pre-NWO. I never put two and two together, but Jimmy would have been, what, 6 or 7 years ahead of time?
Yeah, basically, no, 3 years, though, 93, 96. So, yeah, about 3 years before, like, your true invasion angle with the NWO. But it's just so interesting, like, they thought about that in 93 of doing a little Smoky Mountain invasion. Had it not been for Watts getting fired, you would have saw more, basically, of it.
Yeah, yeah, because Jimmy did get along with Bill.
So here, it's originally, as Shivani mentions, it was going to be WCW against Smoky Mountain. It was going to be Heavenly Bodies against Fury and the Terminator. The Terminator, of course, is Animal's little brother. But it was going to be the Wrecking Crew against Smoky Mountain. I guess more of a WCW, Smoky Mountain feel to it. Wrecking Crew, they, you know, they kind of throw them by the wayside, and you get Rock and Roll Express against the Heavenly Bodies, which is a way, way, way better match. I mean, Rock and Roll Express, Heavenly Bodies tore the house down. This match is unbelievable. It's an awesome match. Rock and Roll Express get the win, and the match goes about 13 minutes. Of course, this is Pritchard and Lane, but to me, I mean, that's a way better match. I mean, you're getting Rock and Roll Express and the Heavenly Bodies here. You're getting awesome chemistry and a good match. What do you think of your Rock and Roll Express getting the dub?
Get the win?
Yep.
I mean, when people talk about great tag teams, they're going to be in the top one hand, right?
I would think so.
Yeah, I definitely do think so. You know, they're still going now with Ricky's youngest kid. Not youngest, but Ricky's kid in college.
Kerry, yep.
Yeah, they're doing and he's a wonderful young man, wonderful. Ricky and his wife have done a wonderful job raising him, and he's a good performer. I saw him about 3 months ago wrestling. He was very good.
So basically here, Bischoff kind of ends the Smoky Mountain relationship, and Rock and Roll Express and the Heavenly Bodies back to Smoky Mountain, and they're no longer part of WCW, but kind of what could have been if the Heavenly Bodies would have stayed around, kind of would have been a nice infusion to the tag team divisions, because Dr. Tom and Stan Lane were great. I know Stan Lane would retire later on in the year, and Smoky Mountain would then strike a deal with WWF. And Survivor Series, you'd have the Rock and Roll Express against the Heavenly Bodies again. This time, a Gigolo Jimmy Del Rey, all you're doing, by the way, would be the partner. And they'd have a very similar match, but that match was in Boston, and it wasn't as good as the match here in North Carolina. The crowd loves that Southern style here at Super Brawl a lot more.
Yeah. I was just thinking what we were talking about. In one respect, that could have changed wrestling history. Because if Jimmy came in with that, there would probably have been no Hogan term.
Really? Well, you're thinking that far ahead.
Well, I mean, if you do the invasion angle, you're going to repeat yourself, and you're going to... This is why I talked to you about what are you going to do come Saturday? Well, if they had done this invasion angle, and you talked about Jimmy's going to add more guys, you know what I'm saying?
Yep.
It's not the same as being brand new and fresh and innovative.
Yep.
And they've seen it already. So maybe wouldn't have, nobody would have had that idea to do it.
Yeah, could have changed things. Had, you know, done the invasion angle here with Smoky Mountain if it would have lasted. But obviously no more Watts. Bischoff comes in. The relationship with Cornette's over. Cornette then, of course, then makes a deal with WWF. And, you know, WWF and Smoky Mountain for a few years are working together. And then obviously Cornette over the summer becomes Yokozuna's manager, his American manager. So my how things have changed within only a few months for Cornette, WCW, and the WWF.
Yeah, absolutely.
The next matchup is the United States Championship match. Dustin Rhodes defeated Max Payne by DQ in about 11 minutes and 30 seconds. I don't know, not that great here. Was okay, I guess, but it wasn't really a great match. I don't know, almost maybe felt like because Payne was the fill-in, it just didn't quite work, but Dustin Rhodes ends up getting the win via DQ here in this one.
Yeah, you know, it's like the rule of thumb when you have a substitution is he goes over. So I don't know if this is what they did. It's like, oh, we can't beat him in the ring, so we'll work a DQ. It was like you're trying to choose two masters, you know what I mean?
Yep.
You got to choose somebody.
Yep. So Ric Flair, woo, he's in the house and he's down at ringside. He makes his big return to WCW. He's in a nice suit. He obviously can't wrestle yet because of the no-compete, but he'll be interviewed by Schiavone. And Flair says he's going to be watching this NWA title match between Barry Windham and the Great Muta. Basically, the belt he never lost. So, interesting return here for the Nature Boy. Definitely an infusion to the main event scene, just like that with his return.
Big time. Big time. What I was thinking when you said he was down there in a nice suit. How many suits do you think Flair has bought in his lifetime?
500? 1,000? I mean, he's got a lot of suits.
I bet he has more than 1,000.
I don't know if I like, per se, his suits nowadays, though. Have you seen it? Like, with the little threads on it? He's just, like, almost too, like, he's...
Okay, he's a carnival barker.
Yeah. It's like a young hipster or something. Or something. It's his old suits were the best, like, you know, to the nines, three-piece suit and everything. Nowadays, I don't know. He's got an interesting style going for him.
He sure does. Boy Pierce, you ever hear that name?
Yes.
You remember his suits?
Oh, yeah, from Mid-South, yeah. Yep.
Yeah, it sure looks like Boy Pierce.
Not a good thing, yeah. So the next match, of course, that Flair's watching, Barry Windham defeats the Great Muta for the NWA World title. The match goes 24 minutes. Surprisingly, it was okay, but it, I don't know, it was lacking something. Something was missing here. It could have been a little bit better. I don't know if I was just distracted or if everybody was distracted by Flair being there, but Windham is a new champ. He's a heel. He, you know, Flair's going to be the babyface, and Flair's going to be feuding with him for the NWA title going forward as Muta goes back to Japan. But it's just, I don't know, something didn't quite click with them here. But Windham, they get the result they wanted. Windham is now the NWA world champion.
Don't hold me to this, but I think this is when Muta was starting to have his first serious knee problems.
Ah, interesting. Okay.
You know, I think he's had both knees replaced.
Yes, yeah.
He started to have it young.
And he's going to have his last match basically in a week or two, yeah.
Yep.
So the main event of the evening is going to be the White Castle of Fear strap match. I guess the White Castle of Fear is just Vader's thing, but it's a strap match. Vader, of course, is WCW champion. He's with Harley Race. This match is unsanctioned, though, so it will not be for the title. which was, I don't know if that was a Watts decision, if that was being held over or what, but do you like that though? It's a non-title match because it's non-sanctioned and they won't sanction the strap match. Does that make sense psychology-wise?
Well, psychology, that's Bill's psychology. You know, when he came back in, I do remember hearing that he took the mats up, right?
Yep. And couldn't go off the top rope. Yep.
Yeah, but you did because guys drop kicked off the top rope all the whole time. He wanted them to cheat. And like he's saying, we're not going to allow this anymore. We're going to go back to old school. Ray Stevens drew more money in San Francisco than anybody in the history of San Francisco. His finish was the bombs away, the knee off the top rope. Pat Patterson was too, yep, when he went to New York. So he wasn't reinventing the wheel, Bill.
So this match here is awesome. I know Dave Meltzer, if people want to, you know, love him or not, he loved this match as well when you look at it, which is surprising because sometimes he wouldn't rate Sting matches that high. But, man, Vader gets the win here. He defeats Sting in 21 minutes. This, I don't know, something about these two's chemistry together. Sting just gets his ass beat. And, you know, he keeps fighting back. He's fighting from underneath. He's fighting up. He's just trying to beat Vader. At one point, I mean, it becomes like a bloody brawl, too. It just gets crazy. Harley Race, if people are paying attention, actually puts a few little razor blade cuts, and nobody obviously not supposed to know, but he's patting Vader in the back, and I caught on to it. He was blading Vader's back, and when Sting would whip him, the blood would be all over the back. So it's like, wow, never seen that before. That's like pretty extreme.
I've never seen it either.
Weird, right?
I've seen arms cut. I've seen ears cut.
Yep. He was cutting little cuts in his back. What? And when Sting would whip him, I guess they would open up. And I mean, he just was bleeding out of his back. It was pretty vicious.
Yeah. Yeah.
But man, what a slugfest between these two. Something with these guys, Sting and Vader, they just couldn't have bad matches. And you would think like, oh, you know, WWE 93, I don't know how you know, if it's going to get too vicious. Oh, it gets vicious, it gets stiff, and there's a lot of blood involved. So Vader ends up getting the win in this bloody brawl. He drags him to three corners. Sting kind of inadvertently kicks Vader. Vader gets the fourth turnbuckle for the win. You like Vader going over here. Even though it's a non-title match, he's the champ. He goes over. Champ wins. Kind of kept both guys looking strong.
The finish was made work because you got to save your baby face, but you don't want to start beating your heel. I mean, your champ. That's a heel in non-title matches. To me, that's a dead giveaway. I popped myself thinking what you just said about the cuts in the back, right?
Yeah. Yep.
Don't some parents or family members call when people in their family cut one another? I'm not making light of it, but don't they send you the psychiatrist?
Yeah. They should send Harley Race and Vader. Yeah, they're cutting each other, yeah. Or Race is cutting Vader, yeah. Yep.
And Vader had, you know, he had a back the size of a barn. You know what I mean? He was a big, big guy. So I guess when he got those little cuts, when you hit him with the strap, it bring the blood to the surface, right? It just eased out. Wow. Yep.
So Vader wins. After the match, Sting starts whipping Vader. He starts whipping Harley Race. They roll to the outside. You know, he kind of looks strong in the end, but Vader's get the win, and him and Race go off to the back. They cut to Barry Windham saying he's going to take the Muda nameplate off the title. He's the NWA champion, and that Flair, he wants him next. So that's like the lasting moment of the pay-per-view before they go back to Tony and Jesse, is that Windham is champion holding the belt and that he wants Flair next.
Pretty good storyline they wrote out that night, I think.
So you got Vader and Sting, which was awesome, plus Bulldog kind of lurking the title hunt. Then you got Flair and Windham lurking for the NWA title. So they got a bunch of good main event acts going here from the show. What do you think of the show? Thumbs up, thumbs down?
Yeah, I'd have to say thumbs up because they put things in place. A lot of nice things in place, had some exposure, nice match for the Hollywood Blondes, gave Cactus some time. I think they did the best what they could do.
Hollywood Blondes were strong. Scorpio and Benoit was awesome. Cactus Jack versus Orndorff was awesome. Rock and Roll Express against the Heavenly Bodies was great. And then the main event with Vader and Sting was awesome. So to me, great show. I mean, if you just like your wrestling with a little storyline mixed in here, you know, I think a little bit of everybody, you know, for everybody, a little buffet here. I think a lot of people will enjoy this pay-per-view. You want some Southern tag wrestling. You want some brutal, bloody matches. You want a crazy false count anywhere match. I think this pay-per-view had it all. Very fun pay-per-view, and I highly recommend it. Definitely two thumbs up from me.
I do too. I do too.
Now let's head towards the plugs. You can follow me on Twitter and Instagram at Two Man Power Trip. Check out the website, tmptempire.com. Go to Instagram and follow Taskmaster Talks and follow Kevin on IG. Kevin, what else do you got going on in this crazy?
Well, before I hit the plugs, I'd like to send my condolences out to the Jarrett family. We always talk about smart guys in the business.
Yep.
Jerry Jarrett was an innovator. I mean, you know, do you know that Kaufman was shut down twice by a promoter?
Vince Sr., right?
And Jim Barnett.
Wow.
I was there when he came to see Jim Barnett. So he brought that in. He was the last promoter left when Vince took over the whole country. Vince Jr., when he thought he might be going to prison for the steroid scandal, which was a joke of the government's part, but they were trying to railroad him. But he had hired Jerry Jarrett to run the company for him. Then WCW hired him for a consultant, and he was a good guy.
Definitely. Yeah. Had the chance to interview him a few times. Super nice guy. Loved chatting with him. So RIP, Jerry Jarrett, true influencer in wrestling. One of the most influential for sure.
Yeah, for sure.
All right. Thank you, everybody out there, for listening. We'll see you right back here next week for a little Taskmaster Talks with Kevin Sullivan. We'll see you next week, folks. This has been a John Paz Power Trip production in conjunction with the Two Man Power Trip of Wrestling. You can follow us on Instagram and Twitter at Two Man Power Trip. You can check us out on Facebook. You can subscribe on YouTube. You can go to patreon.com/TMPTEmpire to become a patron. And also check out the website, TMPTEmpire.com. And buy a shirt at ProWrestlingTees.com. Two Man Power Trip, where the power lies. Brother. Please welcome in our new sponsor, Fishing Clash. Download Fishing Clash for free right now on your mobile phone by typing in Fishing Clash in the search bar of your Google Play or App Store. Open the menu in the top right-hand corner, choose the gift code section, and input my special code, Taskmaster, to get an awesome reward for a total value of $20. Enjoy chilling atmosphere after a hardworking day. Get familiar with different types of fish species and their habits. You can choose one or two, or you know what you like the most. Explore amazing fishing spots worldwide from Florida to Kamchatka. Whether you prefer fly fishing, ice fishing, trolling, you'll admire the look of all the fishing spots available in this game. This game will help you remember how you went fishing with your dad when you were a kid. So download Fishing Clash today for free on your mobile phone by typing in Fishing Clash in the search bar of the Google Play or App Store. Open the menu in the top right-hand corner, choose gift code section, and input the special code TASKMASTER to get a total value of $20. Sit back, relax, and enjoy the Fishing Clash, as it is a great casual time killer.